call the president. President, we need the National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can turn it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
Hold on, ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lex is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from there.
Yo. And welcome back to the Fix Sports Podcast, which is the realest and the blackest sports podcast you have ever heard in your entire life. Coming straight from the south, going down, right here on the Freedom Train Network, www.freedomtrainradio.com. This is Season 3, Episode 3 of the Fix Sports Podcast, brought to you by yours truly, Joseph Ward, the King of Ding-a-ling Slinging. Ask your mother and your girlfriend, because they be bringing me things in the morning, stretching and yawning, because everybody say I block shots like a morning, more so Alonzo, but never Alfonso, Robero, oh shoot, like Romero. Going flying like an arrow or a sparrow. Keep your eyes on me. And everybody say they want to fly, homie. Let me stop. What it is. Welcome back. As you can see, man. Hey, man, I'm hyped. I'm already hyped. Get hyped. I've been listening to Bobby Brown, man. And, you know, if you know Bobby Brown, my favorite R&B singer. Everybody used to always tell me all my life that I was crazy for liking Bobby Brown, for rocking with Bobby Brown. But now the Bobby Brown movie come out and the New Edition movie come out, everybody all of a sudden want to be Bobby Brown fans. But if you want to know Bobby Brown fan back in 94, back in 96, back in 99, back in 2000, back in 2003, 2007, 2011, then you ain't no real Bobby Brown fan. You feel me? Every little step. Man, Bobby Brown used to be right, but you know what I'm saying? So shout out to Bobby Brown, the real king of R&B. You know what I'm talking about? Everybody thought Bobby Brown was crazy, man. Bobby Brown ain't crazy. He's just the realest ever. You already know. Yeah, I told you I'm hyped, man. I'm hyped. It's going down today. We got a good show. I'm in here. I done took a bathe. After this, I'm going to go eat, but it's all good. Hey, remember, the Fix Sports Podcast is brought to you by On the Shoulders of Giants. And On the Shoulders of Giants brings you African history at your fingertips and on the go through the On the Shoulders of Giants book series, the blog series, the African History Curriculum app, which is available in the Google Play Store right now. So go get it. It's free. Available in the Google Play Store, On the Shoulders of Giants. So go get that. The On the Shoulders of Giants YouTube channel. Nonprofit organization, as well as speaking engagements, educational sessions, keynote sessions, whatever you need, whatever capacity you need on the Shoulders of Giants to present you the information in, whether face to face or digitally. Remember, our information is for smartphones, it's for tablets, it's for smart boards, it's for smart TVs, smart people. So make sure you visit www.ontheshoulders1.com. As well as www.ontheshoulders.org. And remember, On the Shoulders of Giants Volume 3, South America, On the Shoulders of Giants Volume 3, South America is coming soon. So stay tuned. Going down. Yeah. So today, I'll give you a rundown of what we're talking about today on this good Monday. HBCU spotlight will be shined on Morehouse, but remaining undefeated with a blowout win over Central State. Then we have a Texas A&M. This is an older story, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. A Texas A&M player had transferred. He alleged multiple NCAA violations under Jimbo Fisher. I'm like, well, damn, Jimbo just got that, right? The Cleveland Browns releasing Josh Gordon. Reports say that Monday they're supposed to be releasing Josh Gordon, so we're going to read into this. Will Dez Bryant play football this year? That's the burning question. I don't know. Off-topic shit is, what role did Joe Biden play in the creation of the 94 crime bill? You know, and I want to talk about this because Joe Biden is Black America's favorite vice president just because he was Obama's vice president. But listen, but Black people hate Hillary Clinton and the Clintons for the 94 crime bill. So let's see what role Joe Biden played in it, right? I'll give you an update on week 3 of college football. And remember, you're going to get your update of week 2 of the NFL on Friday's show. In boxing, we got the Garcia versus Porter fight. So Sean Porter defeated Danny Garcia, so we're going to talk about that. Alvarez Canelo won the rematch over Triple G. We're going to talk about that because I watched that fight Saturday night. I kind of disagree, but okay. Would there be a Mayweather-Pacquiao part 2? And do we give a shit about that? Then my weekly rant is, I got to go at the FSU fans once again. These motherfuckers think 6 GoFundMe accounts have been created to fund a buyout of Willie Taggart's contract already after 3 games, and they 1-2. So we're going to go off on them fuckboys. I hate that shit. Let's start from the top with our HBCU spotlight going at Morehouse University because they stay perfect. A big win over Central State. So Morehouse's offense has been clicking on all cylinders this season, and that continues on Saturday. It came away with a blowout win over Central State. When its home opener, 41-14, Morehouse is now 3-0 on the season. Central State took an early took control early after an 82-yard drive that was finished by a 1-yard run by Jerry Lanier. Morehouse immediately marched down the field on a 61-yard drive that was capped off by a Santo Dunn 3-yard run. But after that, the Maroon Tigers upped their game and went to work on Central State. Morehouse put up 31 unanswered points after CSU's first touchdown drive in the first quarter. The Maroon Tigers were lighting up the scoreboard while Central State was lighting up the turnover side of the stat sheet. Yeah. Despite going 16-29 with 291 yards and 1 touchdown, Central State quarterback Trent Mays threw 3 interceptions in the contest. After 2 of those interceptions, Morehouse scored on the following possession. Madrick Ray picked off Mays twice, and Dietrich Vanover grabbed 1 pick as well. As the Maroon Tigers defense was putting in work, so was the offense. Quarterback Michael Sims threw for 27 yards while completing 23 out of 36 passes. He added 1 more touchdown in the air and ground respectfully. Santonio Dunn also added 2 touchdowns on the ground. Overall, Morehouse was effective on every side of the ball. They will be looking to keep that same consistency as they face Miles in the Chicago Football Classic this week. The Maroon Tigers defeated Miles last year by only 3 points. Although Miles is currently 0-3, they always play Morehouse very tough. So Morehouse and the boys came out there and rocked Central State in their home opener, and they dropped 41 points on Central State. Central State really couldn't do nothing about it. I guess Morehouse was feeling their Alabama swag yesterday because, you know, Alabama is dropping fucking 69 points on shit like that. So, but one time for Morehouse, the Maroon Tigers coming out there, remaining undefeated, dropping 41 points on Central State. And you know how we do. So from our hood to your hood, from the fix to Morehouse, we want to give you some love. Show it up. I say, yeah. Thank you. Hey. One time for Morehouse, dropping them things on Central State. Central State, step your game up. Central State, step your game. So I was going through getting all my stuff together this morning, I came across the story. And the headline is, no, this is not a typo. South Dakota State tops University of Arkansas Pine Bluff 90-6. Damn, 90? Come on, B. 90 parents? Bruh. They weren't taking no shorts, no losses on Arkansas Pine Bluff. And they dropped 90 points on them. Wow. That's crazy. But let's go ahead and get deep in. So South Dakota State rewrote its record book numerous times Saturday night, including setting new standards for points and total yards. In a 90-6 victory over Arkansas Pine Bluff in the 52 annual Beef Bowl at Dana J. Dickhouse Stadium. Okay. Dickhouse, whatever. The third-ranked Jackrabbits improved to 2-0 overall, while University of Arkansas Pine Bluff dropped to 1-2 this season. South Dakota State University needed only 5 offensive plays to score its first 3 touchdowns. What? Wow. All on passes from senior quarterback Tyron Christian. After a 29-yard punt return by Marquise Lewis puts South Dakota State University deep in the Golden Line territory, the Jackrabbits needed only 2 plays to cash in as Christian found freshman tight end Blake Coons over the middle for an 8-yard score. A turnover on the next Arkansas Pine Bluff possession led to a 31-yard scoring pass from Christian to Adam Anderson, who leaped up over 2 defenders to corral his first career touchdown. Moments later, Christian hooked up with reigning Missouri Valley Football Conference Offensive Player of the Week, Cade Johnson, deep down the field for a 71-yard touchdown that gave South Dakota State a 21-3 lead. On the play, Christian became the Missouri Valley Football Conference Offensive Player. The Missouri Valley Football Conference is career leading touchdown passes, surpassing the 7-8 thrown by Illinois State's Matt Brown from 09 to 2012. Jamie Gilliam, who connected on the 47-yard field goal midway through the first quarter, added a 20-yarder later in the stanza to pull within 21-6. However, the Jackrabbits would tally the final 69 points of the game and continue to churn out big plays, as 8 of the 13 touchdowns they scored on the night covered at least 30 yards. You can't have 8 touchdowns for over 30 yards in one game. Shit. Christian, who played only in the first half, threw 2 more touchdowns before exiting, finding Jacob Brown in the end zone from 9 yards out late in the final minute of the first quarter and adding a 40-yard scoring strike to Johnson early in the second quarter. It marked the 5th touchdown game of Christian's career early in the second quarter. Wow. Combined, 3 Jackrabbit quarterbacks went 19 for 21 passing with single game records of 557 yards and 8 touchdowns. Christian was 13 for 14 for 332 yards, while backup Kanan Nelson finished 4-5 passes for 136 yards, with touchdowns on screen passes of 66 to Pierre Strong Jr., 37 to C.J. Wilson. Third-string signal caller Justin Roberts completed both of his passes for 89 yards, including a 76-yarder to Michael Wanamaker, who caught a pass on a quick-out pattern, broke a tackle along the right sideline, and rambled the rest of the way to play dirt. The Jackrabbit running game also got in the act, headlined by Isaac Wallace's 192 yards on 5 carries. Wallace scored on runs of 58 and 79, while Mikey Daniel plunged in twice on short runs, and Blair Mulholland contributed to 14-yard runs. I don't even want to read this no more. God damn, they had a total of 926 total yards of offense. 926, God damn, Pine Bluff. Y'all said, fuck it, huh? My homeboy, Monty Floyd, went to Pine Bluff. Monty Floyd, I know you can't hear me right now, but Monty Floyd, you hear this? You got to go to Pine Bluff, and you got to go kick somebody's ass, man. Y'all can't give up 900 total yards and 90 points in one game? 952 total yards in one game and 90 points? Pine Bluff said, fuck life, huh? Damn. Y'all act like y'all played Alabama or some shit, Pine Bluff. Fuck out of here with all that shit. That's a lot. Damn. That gave me heartburn. That shit gave me gas, man. 952 yards, 90 points. Shit, man, that make your hemorrhoids flare up. I know that coach after that game got to go. He got to go question his life after that game. Shit. All right, so former Texas A&M linebacker, and this is an old story, but the headline said former Texas A&M linebacker seeking transfer waiver alleges multiple NCAA violations by Aggie staff. So former Texas A&M linebacker Antonio Marcioli is alleging that Texas A&M violated multiple NCAA rules under new coach Jimbo Fisher, according to a report from USA Today. Marcioli, whatever his name is, a rising redshirt freshman who followed former Aggies coach Kevin Sumlin to Arizona claimed that he was given cash by staff members to host prospects on unofficial visits. The new staff organized summer practices that are not permitted by NCAA rules, and the staff pushed him to work through the ankle injury in an attempt to change the culture of the program. The cash was allegedly given to Marcio by linebackers coach Bradley Pivetto, on two separate occasions. He alleges that he received $300 in the bathroom from Pivetto after the spring game and $400 in June to host another prospect. $300 in the bathroom sounds like Pivetto trying to suck him up or something, trying to get him to let him fuck or something. That don't sound good. Talking about $300 in the bathroom. Don't you pull out no damn money in no bathroom with me. I might punch you. No, that don't sound. I'm just saying it don't sound right. It's just saying, hey, we're in the bathroom and you pull out $300. That sounds like you trying to fuck. You know, so I'm going to have a problem with that. Don't you? You better wait till we step outside the goddamn bathroom and pull your money out and try to get me. Don't pull your money out in the bathroom. That's going to set. You might get fucked. I'm just saying, you know, that's what I'm just saying. Just talking about me. You know how you tip people in Vegas? He had the cash in his hand, and he, like, handed it to us, like, here with a handshake, Marcioli told USA Today. That's that college people talk. The remaining allegations both point to a culture change that Fisher has been trying to install in College Station. Marcioli claims that coaches were present during off-season conditioning far beyond the 8 hours per week that were allotted under NCAA rules. The alleged practices included coaches operating as if they were normal practices taking place during camp, and Marcioli believes the coaching staff, including defensive coordinator Mike Elko, knew that it was breaking the rules. Elko said, "We're going to have a lot of meetings and practices that aren't technically required, but you guys have to hear. I have to be here because you're way behind. We need to win," Marcioli told USA Today. Fisher was asked at SEC Media Day about comments made prior to the event about the players being soft when he got to College Station. "No, I didn't say soft. I just said we're going to play tough," he said. "How they played, I have no idea. I have no idea. And again, I did not refer to anything back. And it's hard to, the way a coach plays his team until you understand and been in his shoes and understand that team. I think it's very hard to say anything about him. I just say we have to play with great toughness. We have to play with tremendous physicality. I think the teams in this league that win, the teams that win national championships, and the success we had at Florida State, that's how we played. Marchioli's third allegation claims that staff rushed him back from an ankle injury that continued to swell in order to instill that toughness. Fisher has been adamant about how things had changed in Aggieland ever since taking over the job. In our short time in A&M, I've been there since December. I've been very busy trying to establish the things that put the culture in place since we think we have to be successful in this league. As I know, this is as good as league as there is in college football, he said at SEC Media Day. Yeah, bitch, you're in the best league in college football. You're in the SEC West. You're in the NFL Junior, bitch. But you already know that because you left the SEC Junior. I mean the NFL Junior. And we still know that you will be challenged every week, so there's a way in which you have to go about things in the process in which you have to be like, yada, 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 whatever, whatever, whatever. So Marchioli is saying that Jimbo Fisher had boys pulling out money on them in the bathroom and excessive practices and trying to hurt people, and, well, trying to hurt him or make him come back early from an injury that could have left him hurt. I should say that. So, but I'm glad Buddy left, though. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if all this come out to be true. I'm just be real. Hell, man, I come to the conclusion a long time ago that in college football, man, if you ain't cheating, you ain't winning. Now, I could be wrong within the mug, but from what I've been told, from what I've seen and what I've, you know, looked at a little bit for myself, a little bit, so it's more so speculation and everything. You ain't cheating. Some kind of way, the way it's ain't winning. Because I'm still wondering how those years ago, Ole Miss got that group of players, that group of real good players coming to their school for like 4 or 5 year period. Just out of nowhere, all these top recruits want to go to Ole Miss. Who the hell want to go to Ole Miss just like that? Just off the cuff, just go to Ole Miss. That's some bullshit. Nobody want to just go to Ole Miss like that. Right? So some shit happened, you know, with the Cam Newton situation, but all that is, ain't nothing new. If players are getting paid to play, I'm not mad. Damn it, they need to be paid. I'm not mad. Hey. But players don't need to be getting, overworked and shit like that. So, but players do need to be getting paid to play, but players got to be smart who to take money from and who not take money from. Don't take no money from no motherfucker in the bathroom. Because he bitch give you $300, $500, $600 in the bathroom, then he pulling meat out. Now what? Man, you crazy. Bye. We in a goddamn bathroom. Buddy going to pull out $300. You crazy as hell, boy. But yeah, that's what's going on. Santonio Marchioli. Marchioli, whatever his name is. Four-star prospect. Who transferred and went to Arizona with Kevin Sumlin, left Texas A&M talking about down that fuck shit. So, yeah. Just want to bring y'all up to speed on that. So, are the Browns going to release Josh Gordon? Because some reports talking about Browns going to release Josh Gordon today. So what the fuck is going on between the sheets and Josh's home? You know what I'm talking about? The Browns intend to release wide receiver Josh Gordon on Monday, the team announced Saturday. Yikes! Gordon had missed all of the preseason while nursing a hamstring injury. He scored last week for Cleveland in his season opening tie against the Steelers. Right. For the past 6 years, the Browns have fully supported and invested in Josh. I would have been let that motherfucker go. But personally, and wanted the best for him. But unfortunately, we've reached a point where we feel it's best to part ways to move forward. Browns general manager John Dorsey said in a statement, "We wish Josh well." So let me read the statement. This afternoon, we informed Josh Gordon and his representatives that we're going to release him on Monday, which is today, For the past 6 years, the Browns have fully supported and invested in Josh, both personally and professionally, and wanted the best for him. But unfortunately, we've reached the point where we feel it's best to part ways and move forward. We wish Josh well. Josh Gordon, come to Dallas. Josh Gordon, go to Dallas. Go to Dallas, Josh Gordon. Go to Dallas. Gordon had been ruled out for Sunday's game against the Saints and reportedly arriving late to the facility with an apparent hamstring injury. According to ESPN's Adam Schefter, Gordon suffered the injury during a promotional shoot. Per Schefter, the Browns could trade Gordon prior to releasing him on Monday. NFL Network's Ian Rappaport reported that as many as five teams are interested in trading for Gordon. I hope one of them is Dallas. Rappaport reported shortly after Cleveland's announcement that Gordon was fine at Friday's practice and his release was over a matter of trust. Cleveland.com's Mary Kay Cabot reported that Gordon was not himself when he showed up to the Browns facility on Saturday. Browns officials told ESPN's Chris Mortensen that the team's decision was inclusive of present and past issues. Gordon has been suspended several times during his career for violating an elite substance abuse policy. His first was suspended in 2014 and did not play again until November 2017 when he was reinstated on a conditional basis. The Browns selected Gordon in the second round of 2012 supplemental draft. Through six seasons, Gordon appeared in 41 games, hauling in 130 catches for 3,106 yards and 16 touchdowns. And it has been unfortunate for Josh Gordon. Josh Gordon made a lot of bad decisions. Josh Gordon killed his career. Let's just put it out like that. Josh Gordon killed his career. He couldn't leave the weed alone and all these other things that he just had going on with him. Josh Gordon most likely had real issues going on in his life that were and probably still is going unresolved. I hope they're not still going unresolved. But clearly Josh had some real issues going on in his life, and the weed was coping method. And people seem to may have missed that, you know. But Josh made a lot of bad decisions. So Josh really don't have nobody to blame but himself, because the Browns gave him more chances than he deserved. I will admit that. Cleveland Browns gave Josh Gordon more chances than he deserved. Now, with that being said, the Cowboys receiving core is trash. So Josh Gordon, come to Dallas. But this chapter is finally closed in Cleveland. The Josh Gordon Cleveland Brown saga is finally over, and hopefully Josh Gordon lands in Dallas. My shit gonna always come back to that, because Dallas could use Josh Gordon. Hell, Dallas could use Michael Irvin right now. Shit. Dallas could use Billy White Shoe Johnson right now. Shit. God damn it. We'll take Fred Biletnikoff as is, bitch. Goddamn. We'll take Tony Jones, bitch. You got to be a, that's an inside joke. I know my homeboy Caleb, they know what I'm talking about. Talking about Tony Jones. I just say it anyway. We was in high school. I probably told the story before, but I'm going to tell it again. We was in high school. We had this dude. It was my sophomore year of high school, my second year of high school. And we were still on the JV squad. It was my freshman year, my ninth grade year. And so we had this dude who came out to play football. He came from Florida High. I went to Rickards High School, and Florida High is the high school of Florida State. So Florida State High School. So Florida State University, the high school component of that, the private high school component, is Florida High School. So dude Tony Jones came from Florida High. And, like, you know, all us, me, Caleb, Doc, Brinkley, Cassano playing defense. Shit, I can't remember everybody. And Bruce was quarterback. Bruce Fennell was quarterback. My homeboy, Bruce. Now, I'm going to get Bruce on the show in a little bit. Bruce Fennell is going to be on the show in a little bit, because he coaching football up in Michigan. So we got to get him on the show and talk about what he got going on as a football coach, because that's going to be a part of my life after football series. So I got a couple things coming up for my life after football series, so y'all stay tuned for that. But anyway, Tony Jones came out there, right? Tony Jones, when we saw Tony Jones come down, we were like, damn, that nigga look live. Tony Jones looked live. He had the cleats. He had the socks. He had the outfit like Tony Jones, like he stayed in the mirror for like an hour putting himself together. Like he looked like he was finna be live. We was like, damn, we was a little nervous. Like, damn, though, we ain't gonna never play football. We ain't gonna never get no playing time. Until we started to do our drills and shit. Man, Tony Jones couldn't catch 25 to life if he got caught with the gun in his hand on camera and by the police dog and by the police in the middle of acting the crime. He still couldn't catch 25 to life. That dude couldn't catch goddamn AIDS if they injected that shit into his veins. I'm talking about this motherfucker couldn't catch a nut if goddamn five whores were stroking his penis simultaneously at one time. I'm talking about Buddy's hands are so garbage. His hands were so trash. Like, you know how Hot Hands Hagens on the Little Giants couldn't catch shit before, like, I'm talking about the early stages of the Little Giants where Hot Hand Hagen couldn't catch shit. That's how Tony Jones was. Tony Jones was hot trash. I'm talking about his routes was trash. His hands was trash. But he talked shit and he looked like he was live. Tony Jones was trash. We was like, no. Boy, you out here looking live and trash as hell. Boy, you better get your ass on out for a month out of here. Yeah, we eventually ran Tony Jones' ass from away from Rickard, but Tony Jones looked like he was live, but Tony Jones was not live. So that's why, you know, it's a little joke when I say Cleveland Browns used Tony Jones, but not really because Dallas Cowboys used Tony Jones, but not really because Tony Jones garbage. But that's just how garbage Dallas receiving core is. If I suggest Tony Jones for your ass, and your ass ain't good. If Tony Jones' ass ain't good, and he ain't gonna catch shit. So that's what the fuck going on in Dallas. And I know this wasn't originally about Dallas, but damn it, I just switched over to Dallas. So fuck Dallas, fuck Jerry Jones, fuck Dak Prescott, and all that shit as a Dallas Cowboy motherfucker. Fuck all that shit. But Josh Gordon, hey, remember, your life is. The way your life turns out is going to be determined by the decisions and the actions and the moves that you make. The decisions you make will determine your future. Your life is basically an accumulation of the decisions that you make. If I wake up in the morning and I don't decide to record my podcast, guess what I don't have? A motherfucking podcast. If I play in the NFL, and I'm smoking and smoking and smoke another blunt, roll another up. You know that we can really ease your mind. My ass probably gonna get cut from my team. Probably gonna end up in the league substance abuse program and shit like that. Like you gotta understand, you gotta know, right? You gotta know what to do, when to do, why to do, how to do. So Josh Gordon, yeah, you fucked yourself up on that, bro. I can't even be mad at Cleveland. They gave you too many chances. We straight from Cleveland, clack clack nigga, you bleeding. You wanna fuck with bones? Him and 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 him. You know that bone thug, man. You can't understand half the shit they were saying. Gotta kill, no other one can't get away from my shotgun. The bone used to be riding, you understand. I had the shit that I was saying, like, that bone, it bone and biggie. Only part, especially that crazy bone, that's fucked up. It's the only part of that verse, you know, you understand that. That's fucked up. Everybody wait on that part. That's fucked up because you don't know nothing else Bone Thug saying, but Bone Thug used to be riding. Shout out to Bone Thug, eat 1999. I'm talking about. Nigga, this ain't clear. All right. Will Dez Bryant get a job in the NFL this year? Because right now, it looked like Dez Bryant may or may not get a job. Now, Josh Gordon being released from Cleveland may be good for Dez Bryant, but guess what? They've been down that road before. All I know is that I've been at a rope before. So Dez Bryant may have, like my mama said, burnt his draws with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Y'all say burn bridges in the mainstream world, but over here we say he done probably done burnt his draws. Desmond probably done burnt his draws, right? So, I don't know, man. I know he had a chance with Baltimore. Cleveland was flirting with the idea. Trying to think what other teams that may have. What other teams? I'm looking through this article as well. Besides the Ravens and the Browns, I thought that Dez would possibly go to the Patriots as well, because New England is infamous or famous for finding those players and kind of putting them on and signing them, and then they go to New England to ball out. But the season has started coming from week two, but it's still early though. So I don't know, but it's beginning to look like Dez Bryant may or may not find a team anytime soon. Especially like you got Philip Dorsett out there. Philip Dorsett had a good week one. So will he have a good week two? We're gonna see. But it's still early. It's only week two in the NFL, so. But Dez Bryant, I'm not gonna lie, I was expecting him to be on a team by now. I was expecting him to be in somebody's training camp and being ready to play week one and all those things there, but I don't know. I'm not even sure who's interested in Dez anymore. I think Dez may have messed himself up. He may have marketed himself wrong. And yeah. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what's going on with Dez. I want Dez to play. I want Dez to be on the team. Because Dez didn't have a garbage year last year. He just didn't have a year a number one receiver would have. Right? He didn't have a number one. He just didn't. Like, his career, he got 531 receptions, 7,459 yards, 73 receptions. Cowboys all-time leading receiver in receptions and things like that. But his, trying to find his stats last year, his stats wasn't horrible. They just wasn't good for a number one receiver, but for a second and third receiver, those were pretty straight stats. So Dez Bryant still serving that capacity, but Dez Bryant also have to get in his head that he's not a number one receiver. Hence, your ass ain't on nobody's team. And it's receivers who are not as good as Dez who are on people's teams. So let's not act like Dez can't play football. Let's not act like Dez is garbage. Let's not act like Dez is at the bottom of the barrel. It's receivers that Dez is running laps around as far as talent and how good he is, but Dez isn't on the team because, kind of like Josh Gordon, some of the things and decisions, things that he's made weren't the smartest, so Dez is where he is right now. I do wish the brother well. I do hope the brother gets on the team. I do hope the brother situation changes. I don't want Dez to be out of a job this year, the whole year, but I do need Dez to understand what's going on, kind of rethink his strategy so he can be more successful rather than being extra emotional, extra emotional, flying off on the handle like a little man, and messing himself up. Emotions make you cry sometimes, and emotions keep you a free agent. Unless your ass in your prime and bowling, and he ain't in his prime and bowling. Hey, before I move on to my next story, I got a problem with Target and FSU, and I probably said this last week, but they just built a new Target in Tallahassee, and they say the FSU Target. They say your new FSU Target is now open. and it's a black girl on the sign. So does that mean, like, if you go to FAMU, you're not welcome, or that target was built only for FSU students? Because if so, then it's fucked up, because FSU got a target and FAMU got a Dollar Tree. Well, damn. They converted a Walgreens in Tallahassee, you know, FAMU side converted a Walgreens into a Dollar Tree. They converted a club on the FSU side, they converted a club into a Target, and it says the FSU Target is now open. I don't shop at Target anyway, so they still not going to get my money, but that's so damn sure going to get my money, because it just don't make me feel welcome. You say the FSU Target is now open. You know. Can we just say the Tallahassee Target or the Tennessee Street Target is open? You got to be the FSU Target. Target these nuts in your mouth. How about that? I got your Target. Target the head of this meat in your eye. How about that? Let me get to my off-topic shit. Right. Because I'm just saying, Target, y'all ain't going to get my money. Oh. That's not it. That's not what I'm looking for. Let me try. I'm trying to bear with me as I pull up my article. As we learn a little more about our homeboy, Joe Biden. Now, off topic shit. What role did Joe Biden play in the creation of the 94 crime bill? When Joseph R. Biden Jr. became the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee in 1987, a few months ahead of his first and ultimately unsuccessful presidential campaign, he told aides his goal was to enact legislation that would take a comprehensive approach to reducing crime. As the ranking minority member of the committee since 1981, Mr. Biden had helped pass two bills establishing mandatory minimums for drug offenses. But as chairman facing high violent crime rates, a crack cocaine epidemic, and accusations by Republicans that his party was soft on crime, Mr. Biden wanted holistic reform. The effort, which defined much of his time as committee chairman, culminated in the 1994 Violent Crime Control and Law Enforcement Act, a sweeping bipartisan bill that touched nearly every aspect of American law enforcement that was signed into law by President Bill Clinton. Let me read that again. Let me read that again for all you Bideners. It says, let me start from this. As the ranking minority member of the committee since 1981, Mr. Biden had helped pass two bills establishing mandatory minimums for drug offenses. But as chairman facing high violent crime rates, a crack cocaine epidemic, which is crazy now, in the 80s it's a crack cocaine epidemic. Now in the 2010s, it's a opioid crisis. Fuck out of here, opioid crisis. Motherfuckers is crackheads. It ain't no crisis. How when black people is an epidemic, but white people is crisis? Fuck out of here with all that shit, though. But never mind. But and accusations by Republicans that this party was soft on crime. Mr. Biden wanted holistic reform. The effort, which defined much of his time as committee chairman, culminated in the 1994 Violent Crime Control and Law Enforcement Act, a sweeping bipartisan bill. A sweeping bipartisan bill that touched nearly every aspect of American law enforcement that was signed into law by President Bill Fuckboy Clinton. More than two decades later, that legislation is once again the subject of fierce debate, this time as a bipartisan coalition of activists and lawmakers seeks to undo the era of mass incarceration they say the 94 bill helped create. The rapid shift in mood that those efforts reflect, a reaction to falling crime rates and a renewed attention to issues of racial injustice, could prove one of many hurdles for Mr. Biden if he decides to become a candidate for president. Already in the 2016 presidential race, Criminal justice has commanded a level of attention unseen since the 1990s and has compelled both Republicans and Democrats to have something new to say about it. For Mr. Biden to win support from the young voters who were critical of President Obama's election victories, according to activists like Jeremy Hale, we need to show his views have evolved. Yeah, right. Any Democrat that is interested in gaining support among the current electorate, particularly the progressive civil rights communities, is going to have to say that previous tougher crime policies were a mistake, said Mr. Hale, Federal Law Advocacy Council at the Sentencing Project. Hillary Rodham Clinton, who in a sense faces the same challenge to address the issue and face major policy speech as a candidate in April. But I just wanted to, give y'all, Joe Biden was behind the creation of the 94 crime bill. Joe Biden, y'all favorite vice president, black people. This is what happens when black folk fall in love with somebody and don't know who the fuck they is. Well, shout out to Roland Martin for bringing this information to light. This is where I learned it from, so I have to go look it up for myself. But Joe Biden was behind the creation of the 94 crime bill. We killed the Clintons for the 94 crime bill, but we never knew that Joe Biden created the 94 crime bill. Now that we know Joe Biden created the 94 crime bill, black people. Oh, never mind. Y'all still gonna love him. Y'all still love Joe Biden. I don't even know why. Well, I'm not gonna waste my time trying to convince somebody to understand what the hell is really going on here. I'm not gonna try to waste my time trying to convince people. That they need to understand and study white supremacy and racism. I'm not going to waste my time trying to convince people that you need to understand the game, learn to play the game, learn how to protect yourself and thrive. But what I am going to spend time doing is educating. I'm not going to force the shit down your throat. I'm just putting the food on the table. It's up to you to eat. Learn politics. Learn these candidates. Learn these people's history and all everything that they do. Before you start falling in love, because the only reason black people love Joe Biden is because he's the vice president of Barack Obama, and they love Barack Obama because he's black. And him and Michelle look like they're head for it. So, yeah, man, you know what I'm saying? I'm just a nobody trying to tell everybody about somebody who can save anybody. Not exactly like that. That sounds like a metaphor, slight off metaphor, but a metaphor of I'm just somebody giving you information to help you help yourself. Yeah, buddy. All right. Let's talk about some college football. College football week three. All three of y'all, and Alabama is still the best team in the nation. So let's start with the game between Coastal Carolina and Campbell. And Coastal beat Campbell 58-21. Old Dominion fell to Charlotte 25-28. Boston College beat Wake Forest 41-34. Utah State beat Tennessee Tech 73-12. Hey, Memphis beat the shit out of Georgia State, 59-22. I was watching this game. This was Friday night. Was it Friday night? Yeah, I think this game was Friday. Yeah, Friday night. Memphis beat the shit out of Georgia State. Like, when I tell you Memphis wasn't taking no shorts, no losses on me, boy, Memphis was not taking no shorts. No loss. Like every time I looked up, like I swear, every time I looked up, somebody from Memphis was just running down the field for a touchdown. Like they had, feel like they had 75 just long running touchdowns. Like Darrell Henderson from Memphis had 14 carries, 233 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Kenny Gainwell had 2 carries for 80 yards. So I guess that's what I saw. But yeah. But Memphis beat them boys 59-22. Like, Brady White, Memphis quarterback, had 269 passing yards, 5 touchdowns. I sound like I can't even talk right now. It was ridiculous, man. Memphis looked like Georgia State wasn't even in their goddamn league, man. Shoot. Big disappointment. Florida State falls to Syracuse 30-7. I never thought I'd see the day with Syracuse beat Florida State, but Syracuse beat Florida State. So give you some stats on this. We have to look closer to this. Because let give you the breakdown. In the first quarter, Syracuse went up with a field goal, 30-0. Second quarter, they went up with another field goal of 6-0. Then they put 2 touchdowns up in the third quarter. They scored 10 points in the fourth quarter. Florida State finally scored in the fourth quarter, but too late. The game was over 37. DeAndre Francois won 18-36, 178 yards in the pick. Cam Akers had 52 yards on 10 carries. Jacquez Patrick had 13 yards on 4 carries. Their leading receiver was Keith Gavin with 6 receptions for 79 yards. Naquan Murray had 3 receptions, 31 yards. Hey, Florida State's receivers aren't that good. Florida State's offensive line is straight trash. And that's the big issue with Florida State. One of the biggest issues, their offensive line is trash. And then they're trying to run that spread offense. And that kind of takes away the protection, the extra help for the offense. And, nah, man, it just don't look good. Still got to give Willie Taggart time to get his players in to recruit the way he recruits. But on the Syracuse side, Tommy DeVito went 11 for 16, 144 yards in the touchdown. For rushing, Mo Neal had 19 carries, 75 yards. Jarvion Howard had 5 carries, 55 yards. Justin Cuttis had 4 receptions, 56 yards. And Ravion Pierce had 3 receptions for 34 yards. And Florida State falls to Syracuse, and it's not looking good over there. And Temple beat Maryland. That's why it's funny. It's funny that Maryland beat Texas, because Maryland just lost to Temple, and Texas just beat USC. So that's crazy. But Temple beat Maryland 35-14. Trojans, who beat FAMU last week, beat Chad FAMU, beat Nebraska. Scott Frost and them boys, the University of Nebraska, 24-19. So some stats. So Caleb Barker for Troy ran 14 for 21, 110 yards. B.J. Smith had 11 carries for 70 yards. Sawyer Smith had 4 carries for 60 yards. So there's some stuff in Nebraska. Yeah, they just didn't bring it. Andrew Brunson, quarterback for Nebraska, went 19 for 27, 177 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks. Nebraska's running back Maurice Washington had 14 carries for 92 yards, and Greg Bell had 14 carries for 64 yards. Stanley Morgan Jr. had 5 receptions, 64 yards, and a touchdown. J.D. Spielman had 6 receptions, 45 yards, and a touchdown. But Nebraska falls to Troy 19-24. Hawaii lost to Army 21-28. Rutgers falls to Kansas. Wow, Kansas, what, they got 2 wins? Fucking Kansas? Shit. 55-14, Kansas beat Rutgers. Connecticut beat Rhode Island, 56-49. Tennessee, back on the winning side, beat UTEP, 24-0. Indiana beat Ball State, 38-10. Kentucky continue to win, beat Murray State, 48-10. UCF and the University of North Carolina, the game was postponed. Clemson beat Georgia Southern, 38-7. Oklahoma beat Iowa State, 37-27. Penn State beat Kent State, 63-10. Georgia beat Middle Tennessee, 49-7. Miami beat Toledo, 49-24. East Carolina and Virginia Tech game was postponed due to the storm. Stanford beat UC Davis, 30-10. Vanderbilt fell to Notre Dame, 17-22, which was a little more competitive game than people probably thought. Oklahoma State beat Boise State, 44-21, which was a little less competitive than I guess people thought. Michigan beat SMU, 45-20. Wisconsin falls to BYU, 24-21. West Virginia and North Carolina State, that game was postponed. LSU beats Auburn in the last second field goal, to beat Auburn 22-21 in the LSU-Auburn game. And the LSU Auburn players were mad because a pass interference was called late in the game with seconds running down, which was a pass interference. But what I saw, that was a pass interference. That was a good call, which put LSU in field goal range, and they kicked the field goal. They were down two, kicked the field goal, up one. Now they win the game 22-21, and the Auburn Tigers fall to the LSU Tigers. War Eagles didn't win. So for LSU, Joe Burrow went 15 for 34, 249 yards, one touchdown. Rushing, Nick Brissett had 19 carries, 69 yards. Joe Burrow had 10 carries, 22 yards. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire had 10 carries, 21 yards, and a touchdown. Justin Jefferson had 5 receptions for 97 yards. Derek Dillon had 1 reception, 71 yards, and a touchdown. So that helped LSU. Auburn, Jared Stidham, 16 for 28, 198 yards, a touchdown, and 2 picks. Jatarvius Whitlow had 22 carries, 104 yards, and a touchdown. Sean Shivers had 7 carries, 25 yards, and a touchdown. Anthony Schwartz had 2 receptions, 37 yards. And Seth Williams had 2 receptions, 35 yards. And Darius Slayton had 3 receptions, 33 yards, and a touchdown. That's not going to cut it, Auburn. Neither one of y'all teams look like y'all ready to see Alabama right now. I ain't gonna lie, but they look good, though. Both teams look good, but they don't look like they're ready to see Alabama. San Jose State lost to Oregon 35-22. Alabama beat Mississippi, beat Ole Miss 62-7. Let me tell you like this. This game was over in the first quarter. Alabama put up 28 points in the first quarter. Ole Miss scored their first touchdown in the first quarter, right? So Alabama put up 28 points in the first quarter, 21 points in the second quarter, 10 in the third, and 3 in the fourth quarter. They took the foot off the pedal in the third, fourth quarter. But the game was over in the first quarter. It was over in the first. It was completely over. They scored 28 points in the first. Alabama had 28 points. That total yards was ridiculous, man. I can't even get my words out. Tua Tagovailoa went 11 for 15, 191 yards, 2 touchdowns. Jalen Hurts went 7 for 10, 85 yards, 2 touchdowns, and he threw a pick. Damian Harris had 5 carries, 62 yards, and a touchdown. Tua had 5 carries, 47 yards. Najee Harris had 9 carries, 38 yards, and a touchdown. Joshua Jacobs had 6 carries, 18 yards, and a touchdown. Like, everybody carried the ball to Alabama. All their running backs played. Alabama's third-string quarterback played. He went 1 for 3 for 30 yards. Alabama's third-string quarterback played most of the second half. Right? For receiving, Jerry Jeudy had 3 receptions, 136 yards, 2 touchdowns. Irv Smith Jr. had 3 receptions, 42 yards, and a touchdown. Jalen Waddle had 1 reception, 30 yards. Henry Ruggs III had 3 receptions, 25 yards, and a touchdown. Every receiver for Alabama played. Like ridiculous, man. This shit was ridiculous the way Alabama put that thing on these boys, man. Let me see. Ole Miss, Jordan Ta'amu. Because, you know, the game was the Hawaiian quarterback matchup, right? So Jordan Ta'amu. He only completed 7 passes, 7 of 22 for 133 yards, 1 touchdown, 2 picks. So I don't have to go no further. That's how that game went. 62-7. Alabama clearly looks like the best team in the nation, right? Mississippi State beat Louisiana Lafayette, 56-10. Ohio State pulls away late against TCU to put that thing on their ass, 40-28. Ohio State was better in the second half against TCU than they were in the first half. Texas dropped their dick on USC 37-14. Washington beat Utah 21-7. San Diego State, damn, they beat Arizona State 28-21. Arizona, Kevin Sumlin beat Southern Utah 62-31. And Fresno State beat UCLA. The upcoming games, Tulsa and Temple on Thursday night. Florida Atlantic and UCF on Friday. USC, Washington State on Friday, Penn State, Illinois on Friday, Boston College, Purdue, Notre Dame, Wake Forest, Georgia and Missouri, Nebraska and Michigan is a game to look at. Who else? What's a Texas A&M and Alabama? That's gonna be a good one. That's gonna be a good one. Texas A&M, Alabama. Yeah. That's talking about Florida State, Northern Illinois. Nobody care about that shit. Miami playing. Oh, Clemson playing Georgia Tech. So that's one to keep an eye on. They do expect Clemson to win. Texas TCU. That's another one. Arizona, Oregon State, against South Carolina, Vanderbilt, if you want to. So, Arkansas, Auburn, not really. Florida, Tennessee, not really. Ain't that many great games. Oregon and Stanford, you can look at that one. Wisconsin, Iowa, you can look at that one. Arizona State, Washington. So, you know, that's college football update. So let's talk a little boxing, like ass whooping. Who trying to get their ass whooped, right? So, Danny, who is this? Sean Porter defeats Danny Garcia to claim the WBC title, right? There's always been a wrought iron will to Sean Porter. It manifests itself in the way Showtime keeps coming forward when the fights, and in the way he refuses to be defined by others for his fighting style or denied when he thinks something is rightfully his. Yeah, because Sean Porter do take a lot of hits, because Danny Garcia was tagging his ass in that fight. He was tagging the shit out of his ass in that fight, but Sean Porter was able to beat his ass, to outbox him. Like wearing a world championship belt around his waist, that's what Sean Porter was. Sean Porter became world champion for a second time in his career Saturday night when and that was last Saturday, winning the WBC's vacant 147-pound title with a unanimous decision over Danny Garcia before 13,000 fans in the main event on Showtime in the Barclays Center. Porter, who is now 29-2-1, and Garcia is now 34-2. So Porter is 29-2-1, won on all three judges' scorecards of 116-112 from Dan Ackerman, 115-113 from Julie Lederman and Eric Marlinsky. Damn, Lederman. I tell people all the time I don't make predictions, Porter said. I made a prediction and a hard one to live up to. I said I wasn't leaving New York without this belt, and I'm not leaving New York without this belt. I knew it was going to be accurate. The game plan for me was to be accurate from the outside and show we could beat him without roughing him up on the rope. This title means a lot to me. It meant a lot to boxing, and I want to be a part of that. He tried to out-hustle me, mostly at the end of the rounds. He did a tremendous job. There were some things missing tonight, and those aren't going to be there in the next. It wasn't necessarily about making it wild. My dad wanted me to stay consistent with the body work and stay consistent with the pressure. As for Garcia, he's of course tough. He of course thought he won. I thought I did enough to win, Garcia said. It was a close fight. The judges didn't give it to me. I busted my head on the side, plus a couple of headbutts on my nose. It is what it is. This is boxing. He was throwing a lot. I had my defense tight, so I wasn't effective. I thought I landed the clear shots. I thought I won this fight. I have to sit back, relax, and see what's next for me. By the 10th round, Garcia lost the distance war. Porter was in his grill fighting his fight. It still didn't mean Garcia didn't land a big shot, which Garcia did, connecting with the right. But in the last 30 seconds, the two played a game of who's stronger and stayed in tight, exchanging heavy shots. It was Garcia, however, that got the better of it in the end. Garcia dug a right into Porter in the 11th, and Porter tried countering. He missed lunging punches. Still, Porter tapped Garcia in the head and the body. His mauling approach produced more oohs and ahs from the crowd, and there may have been enough for Showtime to win the crowd. In the 12th, Porter got off to a good start. Once again, he attacked inside and pounded Garcia's midsection. It was his most effective means of scoring. It was working as Porter crouched. Garcia popped some shots off his head, though a cut was open on the left side of Garcia's scalp, forcing blood to course down the side of his head as the final bell rang. Let me see. They got a little video. Let me see. Let me hit play on this video and see what they show. So they show Porter, bam, bam, bam. Porter hitting Garcia. Porter just unloading on Garcia. Porter just Nah, this ain't Porter and Garcia. Is it? Nah, that ain't Porter and Garcia. Hell, they showing. But anyway, wrong ad video. But yeah, man. It was a good fight. It was a close fight. Garcia did a lot. They both did a lot. It looked as if Garcia, same thing with the Triple G Canelo. It looked as if Garcia was winning, but seemed like Porter may have done more to win this fight. Maybe you boxing experts could see it a little differently, but that's what I saw. I saw kind of Sean Porter. I ain't mad at them for giving him this victory. So Sean Porter is the new WBC champion at 147 pounds. Hey man, I'm in that weight range. I fight Sean Porter. I fight your ass, Sean Porter. No, I'm just playing. I'm just playing. I am not a boxer. I can fight, but I ain't a boxer. So shout out to Sean Porter. So Canelo versus Triple G. Canelo Alvarez versus Triple G. And Alvarez was given the match. I disagree. I watched the fight last night. I watched the whole fight. I disagree. I thought Triple G won the fight. I thought Triple G was hitting him with more shots. I did think Canelo did hit Triple G with more power shots. Same thing like they were just saying Garcia Porter. Canelo got more of the oohs and ahs from the crowds and things, but I thought Triple G did a good job of using his reach, using his range, using his jab, and really sticking and sticking Canelo. I thought Canelo did a great job of being able to get past Triple G's reach and catch Triple G with some shots, because there was sometimes Canelo hit Triple G with some shots, and Triple G had a look on his face like, damn, I don't really want to get hit like that again. So that kind of made you raise an eyebrow when it came to that, because it was like they were trading rounds. Going toward the end, I guess you could probably say Canelo won the 12th. Probably 11th, maybe so, more so Triple G, like 10th, 11th, but I know they were kind of like trading rounds. But as I was watching it, I was like, yes, Canelo tagging Triple G. It seemed like Canelo had more power on his shots, but at the same time, I was like, Triple G looked like he winning. I'm not going to lie, I don't even know why. I wanted Triple G to win, maybe because his name Triple G. I don't have no real reason for wanting Triple G to win, other than they named Triple G. But I was looking for Triple G to win. I don't know why. But for me, from the fight, from what I was looking at, it was a close fight. But Triple G, to me, I thought did enough to win the fight. I didn't think Canelo landed more shots. Now, they was looking at, they were showing like stats last night of the punches that were landed. And Canelo did a better job of landing body shots as well as head shots. Triple G was landing more so head shots than body shots. And I think that there took a toll as well, and that kind of shifted the judges' thoughts as well. Because I know one judge had the score tied at 114-114. Let's say one judge had 112-115, another judge had 112-115, something like that. They may not be exact scores and things like that, but it seemed more along the lines of Triple G landing more, doing more, like being more, like hitting him more, like landing more. It seemed like Canelo's punches were more effective as far as the power punches, like landing those punches, and then you seeing Triple G with that look in the street, like this motherfucker didn't hit me in my goddamn stomach. You know what I'm saying? So that's what kind of looked like with that fight with me. But it looks like we might have a Triple G Canelo part three. We're going to have a three. We're going to have a three because we need a clear winner. We haven't had a clear winner in these fights yet. So we need a clear winner in the Triple G Canelo saga. And until we get that, we're going to keep fighting this motherfucker. Because, hell, right now, ain't no other fights because Anthony Joshua, Deontay Wilder, you know, he's scared. Errol Spence, we looking to see who Errol Spence going to fight. Looking to see who Clarissa Shields going to fight. So, but for right now, Triple G Canelo, this fight went to Canelo. They gave it to Canelo. But, yeah, I thought Triple G won the fight. That's just me. Once again, I'm not a boxing expert. I do know what it looked like when somebody get their ass whooped. I do know what it looked like when somebody land more punches than another person. So, yeah. Those are my thoughts on Triple G Canelo. Y'all can tell me y'all thoughts and things like that. Communicate with the brother, man. At Joe War 84 on Twitter. Freedom Train Network on Freedom Train Net on Twitter. Freedom Train Network on Instagram. Man, holler at your boy. Talk to your boy. Hey, man. First person who holler at me, contact me, talk with your boy, talk about something, you're going to get you a prize. You're going to get you a prize. So make sure you do that. But I guess shout out to Canelo for winning this fight. And we look forward to Canelo Triple G Part 3. All right. Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao seem like they might fight again. Who really gives a shit about this? Who wants to see this? We know. Well, it's just like an old man fight. Old men fighting. And I don't really want to see this, but let's talk about it. After winning their first battle more than 3 years ago, Floyd Mayweather Jr. opened as the favorite in a potential rematch against Manny Pacquiao. Westgate Las Vegas Superbook manager Jeff Sherman released the opening odds for the star-studded showdown on Saturday after money took to Instagram earlier in the day to tease the fight. Mayweather Pacquiao 2 odds at golf odds. And they say we got Mayweather. So, in his Instagram video, the 41-year-old Mayweather said he would come out of retirement to fight Pacquiao in December. He also included the following caption. I'm coming back to fight Manny Pacquiao this year. Another nine-figure payday on the way. He doubled down via ESPN. So that's what he said in this little Twitter video. Mayweather defeated Pacquiao via unanimous decision back in 2015 in the MGM Grand. Then that was 2015? That was 2015? For real? That was 2015. Damn. That pushed Money's record to 49-0. And he would, yeah, because he fought Conor McGregor not too long after that in 2017. Okay. Mayweather had already proved that he can beat Pacquiao. He indicated that he would be in line for another nine-figure paycheck by stepping into the ring for a rematch, according to CNN's Chris Isidore. The first Mayweather-Pacquiao fight brought in $500 million in revenue, and the aptly named Money took home 60% of the cut. Per Forbes' Kurt Brendenhauser, Mayweather became boxing's first $1 billion athlete after he cashed in on the McGregor clash. It's not clear how a rematch would stack up financially in comparison to the first bout. The first fight may be tough to top, but it's important to note Pacquiao, now 39, competed that night with a torn rotator cuff, an injury that he was subsequently going to night to repair. If both fighters are healthy come December, there will be no shortage of intrigue. Shit me. I wouldn't pay to see that shit. I'll tell you that. I wouldn't pay to see Mayweather Pacquiao too. Straight up. Why? We already think Mayweather gonna win. We already know Mayweather gonna win. We already know what type of fight it's gonna be. We already know what type of fight Mayweather fights. He's not gonna change the way he fights. And Pacquiao's just not gonna do. They both old and we don't really give a shit no more. So if they show that bitch on ESPN, I'll watch it. But I guarantee you, I won't spend no money on no goddamn Mayweather Pacquiao. I mean, come on, man. I don't see this shit. Why see your old, like two old drunk ass uncles fighting. And that you're gonna have one uncle throw an overhand punch. Go, Mark, leave me the hell alone. You always messing with me. Nobody wanna see that shit, man. Fuck out of here. My own boy Javar talking about either Mayweather broke or something. He on that fuck shit. Let me see if I can find the exact quote that he said about Mayweather in this phone in his group me. If don't nobody want to see no motherfucking money motherfucking way. Mayweather, let me find. I can't find. Anyway, Floyd Mayweather, man. Don't nobody want to see no goddamn Mayweather. Oh, yeah. It said Floyd either broke or bored. That fight makes no sense. Goddamn right. Floyd either broke or bored. Don't nobody want to see no goddamn Mayweather pack. Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 6, 7, 9, 11. Don't nobody want to see that shit. Hello. So, yeah. If it's tight. Time for the weekly rant. FSU fans, number two, man. Part two, rather. Several GoFundMe accounts created to buy out Florida State coach Willie Taggart after fucking three games. Willie Taggart's tenure at Florida State couldn't have started any worse. Fuck them. Fuck y'all unloyal ass, bitch made ass fans. Black or white. Fuck all y'all bitch-made-ass people. You complaining about Jimbo Fisher, now you complaining about motherfucking Willie Taggart. Let the motherfucking process happen, you simp, bitch-made, titty-sucking motherfuckers. Right? Seminoles were blown out 24-3 in the season open against Virginia Tech. Had to come back from 13-point deficit to beat FCS Sanford and were blown out by Syracuse 37 on Saturday. After the loss, FSU fans were up in arms about this to save the program and how poor the Seminoles looked in the loss. Well, give the motherfucking man time to get his players in to do his recruiting. He's still playing with the motherfuckers left over from the Jimbo regime and that trash-ass offensive line and them trash receivers, right? The Tallahassee Democrat story from December on Tiger's contract had more than 2,000 views Saturday, and some people have even taken it a step further. As of Saturday night, different GoFundMe accounts have been created to pay for Taggart's buyout if he were to be fired this season. So far, a whopping $10. Fuck out. So far, a whopping $10 have been raised. Taggart's buyout would be $21.25 million after this season, not even including guaranteed money owed by assistants. This is an absolutely ridiculous response to the first three games of Willie Taggart's tenure. That's from Wayne McGahee. The team hasn't looked great, but Taggart inherited a mess of an offensive line and has had to install two brand new systems on offense and defense, as well as do what he could to fix a broke culture left by Jimbo Fisher after the 2017 season. FSU isn't going to fire Taggart this year, nor should it, given what the administration paid to get him here and how ridiculous it would be to fire coaches after a single season. Man, fuck all you bitch-made-ass, impatient, unloyal, dick-sucking fans. Fuck all y'all. And everybody who created the GoFundMe accounts, I hope all y'all get the flesh-eating version of gonorrhea that they don't have no cure for and your genitals fall off. That's what I hope for you fuckers. I hope y'all get attacked by raccoons with rabies and you get hemorrhoids and goddamn all types of bad shit happen. I hope all the men get erectile dysfunction and all the women's your coochie dry up and can't get wet no more. And then the next time you have sex, you get embarrassed. Somebody put it on camera and put it on social media so everybody can see that you are improperly functioning as sexual beings. All because you some hating motherfuckers. God damn. Three games and we here? Man, How many weekly rants am I going to have to do to y'all? Monday rants, rather. Am I have to do for y'all in this situation? Let the process happen, you fucktards. This is what happens. See, these the people, when brothers and sisters have babies, they produce people like this. When you have sex with your cousin, right, or your daddy has sex with the daughter, and they have, and there's some incest raping shit happening, and they have kids, and the kids go out into the world, and you know the kids ain't got all the motherfucking chromosomes, or they got extra chromosomes, and people are fucked up, and then they become football fans, and they don't even have no cognitive abilities. This is what happens. Motherfuckers went as far as creating GoFundMe accounts. Bitch, they need to create GoFundMe accounts for y'all to get your lives together. How about that? How about that? Get a GoFundMe account to teach your ass how to bathe. Get a GoFundMe account to get some money, goddamn keep your fucking family together because your wife out there cheating on you with me. Especially if you're white. If all you white people, I hope all you hating racist ass white people, I hope your wives cheat on you with the blackest dudes that they can find. I hope Hakeem and Raekwon and Tyquarius and all them have sex with your wives, and your wives like having sex with black men and come home to your racist ass and tell you that they leaving you for the black dudes with the locks in their head and the golds in their mouth and driving down the street playing Trick Daddy in their Chevys. I hope that's so. And your black folk, I hope you get STDs. I hope that, goddamn, your lights go off. I hope you have to eat Spam for the rest of the year and shit like that. I don't want nothing too bad to happen to the black people. I ain't gonna lie, but fuck y'all. So I just don't like hating. Like, let the shit happen. Let the process happen. Let the man build the program. Guess what? This is like alchemy. Hey, you... flies always got to go through some shit. You'll never be fly if you don't go through some shit. You got to start from the bottom. How you going to stay in the sun? Started from the bottom, now we here. Now the motherfucker actually started from the bottom, and y'all don't understand the fucking process, and you got a problem with the process because he's dealing with the fucking regime that come from the last motherfucking regime under goddamn Jimbo Fisher, who left him this motherfucking mess of a team and all these stockpiles and shit like this. I hear with this garbage-ass offensive line and Naquan Murray and stuff like that. Keith Gavin straight, but Naquan Murray and the rest of them boys ain't talking about nothing. Come on, Nunu. Nooney. Wrong man wants somebody to call him Nooney. But never mind, this ain't about the players. This ain't about the players. This is about these, once again, you hating ass, player hating ass, bitch made ass, dick in the booty ass, sucking the fuck ass, eating cum ass, doo-doo eating ass, pubic hair on your face wearing ass. Goddamn, I got a cul-de-sac bald spot in the middle of my head, and I'm not going to do nothing. As a matter of fact, I'm going to braid the sides down so I can be cool-looking ass. Goddamn, fuck all y'all, man. Y'all some hoes, man. Let the process happen. Let the man build the program. Shit. Hell, man. Nobody come down to your job and knock the dick out your hand while you down there sucking on your job. Shit. You wasn't good at sucking dick on your job when you first started. And you had to build it up. You wasn't making no money sucking dick when you started. So the process had to happen. Now y'all some good whores in life. Y'all are amazing whores in life. But the process had to go from the beginning. Nobody came to your job when you was on the corner sucking dick. Just knock the dick out your hand and criticize you for being a bad dick sucker and using teeth and all that stuff. You had to graduate from being a horrible dick sucker to a good dick sucker. Yeah, I said it. Ain't nobody do that to you, but now y'all want to extra criticize. I knew this was going to happen. We talked about this, though. That's why I didn't want Willie. I really didn't want Willie to have to go through these growing pains because I knew these crackers were going to turn on him. I knew that it was going to turn on him. I just didn't think they were going to turn on him this quick. I was waiting about week six. But damn, they turned on Buddy midway through the first game. This is why I don't want none of our black talent in these white institutions. I want our black talent in our black institutions. These white folk going to turn on you, and these niggas who want to be white folk going to turn on you. We got so many black folk out here who would kill themselves to be accepted by white people and would do anything. And hell, if the white people turn on Willie Taggart, they gonna turn on Willie Taggart. Fuck all y'all. Willie Taggart, just know I'ma cuss all these white folk out for you. I might not ever meet you, and you probably, and you literally right down the street, I can walk to your office, and I probably never meet you. But guess what? I'ma cuss these fuck ass fuckers out. Damn it. Fuck all y'all. That's all I got to say, man. This is Joseph Ward. This is the Thick Sports Podcast, and I am out of here. I see you all on Friday. Two fingers, and I wonder.
I call the president. President, we need the National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack.
His heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lex is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from Nassau. There's no one that can match.